Okay, so on Friday, I've derived the continuum action for which is going to represent the critical properties of the Ising model. So we found that it has a form basically of Klein-Gordon theory for interacting particles in imaginary time. So we have 1/2 grad phi squared plus r over 2 phi squared plus u. And so let me use the coefficient here that's going to be convenient for renormalization group calculations for factorial instead of 4. But this is really not that important. Phi to the 4th, okay? And so on Friday we started doing dimensional analysis of this action. So I want to do this first before I move on to more complicated things. So I've defined the dimension of wave vector or momentum k to be equal to 1. So you want to measure everything, dimensions of all the quantities in units of dimensions of momentum. So then dimension of coordinates is going to be minus 1, right? And then, so from the requirement that this action has to be dimensionless, right, we found the dimensions of phi, r, and u last time. So dimension of phi is d minus 2 over 2, right? Dimension of r is equal to 2, and dimension of u is 4 minus d, okay? And so as we will see later, yeah.
Get to this action integral. So the first part where we kind of expanded in small phi, expanded right. Longer, that part made sense. But I'm still a little confused about why we're justified at looking at only small q's. So I understand that we're saying we only want to see the long length scale right. Correlation. But it's not clear to me that large q values can also contribute to the integral strong. Right, because we're doing this to approximate the integral, so it's not clear to me.
Right, so I mean, the real kind of rigorous justification for doing that is going to be precisely the renormalization group that I'll introduce later. So you can imagine that, you know, I can write that action as an expansion first in powers of phi and an expansion in all the higher derivatives, right, that will represent higher q's. And what we will see is that, you know, both higher derivatives of phi and higher powers of phi will be what's called irrelevant under renormalization group. So meaning that they don't matter. So that's kind of the rigorous justification for doing that. Well, intuitive reason again is that what's important is the behavior of long length scales, right? I mean, and long length scales mean small momenta. Okay, so the certainly, you know, the large momentum may contribute to the values of those coefficients, right? But they won't matter as far as, let's say, so if you want to calculate the correlation function of the order parameter, for example, from this. So small momenta will make important contributions. Okay. Right. So as we'll see later, so this dimensionality will make a very it's going to be very important. So in particular, we will see that quantities whose dimension is positive, like, for example, the dimension of R here, will be relevant, okay? While quantities whose dimension is negative, like dimension of U, if D is greater than 4, for example, those quantities will turn out to be irrelevant. Okay, and so in particular, you can easily check that the dimensions of phi, right, dimensions of higher powers of phi get more and more negative as this power increases. Okay, and so they get more and more irrelevant. And same is true for the dimensions of higher gradients of phi. But so for now, what I want to show is something simpler. So let me use this information about dimensions of various quantities here to rewrite this action in terms of dimensionless variables. And so we'll see why this is useful. So let me define. So first of all, let me assume, just for concreteness, that T is greater than TC, so R is positive, right? Because R is proportional to T minus TC. And then, so let me define the following dimensionless variable. So let me define dimensionless coordinates, X, in the following way. So X, this X without tilde is going to be my original coordinate that has dimension minus 1. And then I write it like this, as x to the tilde, x with tilde, r to minus 1/2, right? So r has dimensions of 2, r to minus 1/2 has dimensions of minus 1, so x tilde is dimensionless. I'll also define dimensionless field, phi tilde, in the following way, as so phi equals phi tilde, r to d minus 2 over 4, so that's the same same reasoning exactly, right? And so then I can rewrite this this action in terms of x tilde and phi tilde. So let me just write down the result. That's a very simple algebra. So I get s of phi tilde. So this is going to be equal to integral d x tilde. So 1/2 grad tilde, meaning gradient with respect to dimensionless x. So it's also dimensionless. Grad tilde of phi tilde squared plus, so with this redefinition, actually, R here disappears completely. I just get a coefficient of 1/2. So plus 1/2 phi tilde squared, right? And then the U changes in the following way. So I have 1 divided by 4 factorial U, and then R to d minus 4 divided by 2 times phi tilde to the 4th, okay? So I can call this this coefficient of phi tilde to the 4th the new u. We call this u tilde. And so we see that u tilde now, so u is just some positive constant, right? But so u tilde goes as t to d minus 4 over 2, right? Because r is proportional to t, the reduced temperature. T to d minus 4 over 2, right? And so you see that if, again, if the dimension is greater than 4, right, then as we get closer and closer to the critical temperature, this term becomes smaller and smaller. Okay? While if d is less than 4, this term actually starts diverging as we get closer and closer to the critical temperature, right? And so this, you know, this is really, so we've already seen that you know, expanding around mean field theory, expanding around the saddle point of this action doesn't work, right? Because we get divergence, divergent contribution from fluctuations if d is less than 4, right? So, but another method you might try is doing perturbation theory in this phi to the fourth term, right? The reasoning being that without that, this is just a free, well, in the quantum field theory language, this would be free field theory, right? Klein-Gordon theory for a free particle. But so formally, this is just a quadratic Gaussian integral in phi, which can be done exactly, right? So then one might think that you can calculate the partition function, which is integral over phi e to minus s of phi, perturbatively in U somehow, right? But what this scaling dimensional analysis shows is that in fact you cannot do it because the contribution of that term diverges when d is less than 4. Okay? Yeah.
Can you just say again how you defined the nubla tilde? Did you just absorb the factors of R?
This you mean?
The delta or gradient.
Oh well, so it's just so gradient tilde means dx tilde, right? Instead of ddx. So basically, you know, again, so this says that when d is less than 4, perturbation theory in U would also not work. Okay. And so, you know, we are really faced with a difficult problem, right? So we have this integral z equals d phi e to minus s of phi, and we can't apply to it any of the, you know, the standard methods for dealing with such integrals. We cannot expand around the saddle point, which would correspond to mean field plus fluctuations, and we also cannot do perturbation theory. Okay, so the solution to this problem is renormalization group. So there are two
I think you might have already answered this question, but it seems like, so if the phi to the 4 contribution is going to diverge for d less than 4, I mean, would you expect the higher powers of phi to also then contribute more strongly?
No. So that's a different divergence.
Sorry, can you repeat the question, please?
I'm just wondering about the higher powers of phi. I mean,
it's a different thing.
Okay.
So.
For d less than 2, they become more and more relevant, right? As the power increases?
So that's a different issue, right? So what this shows is that you cannot do kind of brute force perturbation theory, either perturbation theory in U or perturbation theory in fluctuations around mean field. So the irrelevance with respect to this RG transformation that I will introduce, that's a slightly different thing. Okay? Well, not slightly, it's a completely different thing. So there are two ways to kind of view this RG transformation that I will introduce. So one is kind of purely technical, which I will start from. But then, so it also has kind of a pretty deep physical meaning that we will discuss once I get through a few technical details, okay? So the purely technical viewpoint is that our G transformation is kind of a trick of doing this integral, okay? And so the point is that all the problems with the expansion around mean field and the perturbation theory arise from small momentum modes of phi, okay? Because that's where we get the divergences from. Divergences come from small momentum parts of various integrals involving modes of phi. Okay, so the problems arise from k going to 0 divergences as we get close to the critical point, right? So it's a contribution of those fluctuations at large length scales comparable and larger to the correlation lengths, right, which diverges as we go closer to the transition. So on a purely technical level, RG is the following trick. So what you want to do is always avoid doing integral over the small momentum modes, okay? So what I mean is the following. So let me write my continuum field phi of x in terms of its Fourier transform. So I'll write it like this: integral from 0 to lambda d dk 2 pi to the d phi of k e to I k dot x. So lambda here is the high momentum cutoff, which comes from the fact that, you know, we have the underlying microscopic Ising model, which is defined on the lattice, right? So lambda is proportional to 1 divided by a, where a is the lattice constant, right? So that just comes from the fact that, you know, originally we had all momenta defined in the first Brillouin zone, which has a size precisely proportional to 1 over a, pi over a. So once we've taken the continuum limit, the memory of that lattice more or less disappeared, except in this high momentum cutoff, right? So in quantum field theory, this is in fact a big problem because there is no intrinsic high momentum cutoff or small distance cutoff in quantum field theory, right? And then, so if you just try to do quantum field theory without cutoff, you get ultraviolet divergences, right? So you need to introduce this cutoff. But in condensed matter physics, there is no problem. There is a physical cutoff that comes from the fact that the degrees of freedom are always defined discretely on some kind of lattice. There is always some microscopic length scale which enters. And I mean, that's probably true in quantum field theory as well, right? It's just that, the problem is that in particle physics, I guess particle theories are brought up in the belief that Lorentz invariance is kind of fundamental property of nature that exists at all length scales. While, you know, cutoff, that discreteness of space basically violates Lorentz invariance. And so that's why it's a problem for particle theories. But I guess the point is that Lorentz invariance is really not fundamental, most likely. And it breaks down if you go to small enough scale.
Sorry, yeah. We're saying the problem is called from small case, but then we're bounding the upper.
That's not an issue. This is just this exists in the theory, right? This is physical cutoff. I mean, the problem arises from small case. We have not dealt with that yet. This is a trivial problem. Okay. And so this integral from zero to lambda simply means that the magnitude of k is restricted to be less than lambda, right? And now I want to rewrite this integral in the following way: it's a sum of two integrals. So let me define phi of x to be a sum of what I call phi less of x plus phi greater of x, right? Where phi less of x is going to contain modes with wave vectors from 0 to some cutoff, which is going to be smaller than the original cutoff by this factor 1 over beta, okay, where beta is slightly larger than 1. So g dk 2 pi to the d phi of k e to I k dot x, right? While phi greater of x are going to be the rest of the modes, so the modes at high momentum. So integral from lambda over b to lambda d dk 2 pi to the d phi of k e to I k dot x, right? And so I want to have this b to be so slightly a number which is slightly larger than unity, okay? So this lambda over b is just slightly less than lambda. So,
So the cutoff arises naturally from the length scale that you have in your lattice, but this b is something you're gonna tune, or?
So b is just gonna be, so we wanna do this transformation in small steps, right? And so that b is basically the size of the step, okay? Well, you will see
a separation between the low energy modes and the high energy
right.
modes, right?
And I wanna kind of do this separation little by little. Okay. So these modes will be called slow for obvious reasons because they correspond to small wave vectors, so slow modes. While these modes are going to be fast modes, and so what I want to do as a first step of the RG transformation is to integrate over only the fast modes, okay? And so in that case, precisely, I'm avoiding integrating over modes with wave vectors close to 0. And those are the modes that give me problems. I will integrate always only over the fast modes. Okay? So, but let me first, before we actually integrate, let me first rewrite S of phi in terms of the slow and fast modes, just to see the structure.
Um,
Okay, so I have S of phi equals integral dx, 1/2 grad phi squared plus r over 2 phi squared plus u divided by 4 factorial phi to the fourth, right? And so if I rewrite in terms of the slow and fast modes, if I separate my phi of x into phi less and phi greater in this way, right? So then clearly, so I'll have s, which depends on phi less and phi greater, right? And so there will generally be three types of contributions to s of phi. They will be parts that depend only on phi less. It will be a part of S of phi which depends only on the slow modes. There will be part of S of phi which depends only on the fast modes, right? And those will come from the quadratic part of S of phi, as we will see. In the quadratic part of the S of phi, the slow and fast modes just decouple from each other, while the interaction term is going to give us mixing between the slow and the fast modes, the interaction between the slow and the fast modes. So I'll write this as S interaction of phi less and phi greater, okay? Okay, so let's first deal with the quadratic terms, the simpler ones. So let me call the quadratic part of S as 0 of phi, right? So 0 of phi is 1/2 integral dx grad phi squared plus r phi squared. So if I rewrite this in wave vector space or in momentum space, it's going to have the following form, right? 1/2 integral dk 2 pi to the g, right? So I'll have phi of minus k, phi of k, right? Then, so as you remember, gradient of phi, when Fourier transform gives us just k squared, and then r stays as r, okay? Now, so let me note one important thing. So the field phi of x is real, right? It's a real field. What this implies is that phi of minus k and phi of k are actually not independent, right? So if I write Fourier transform for complex conjugate of phi, which is the same as phi because phi is real, right? So I have integral dk 2 pi to the d phi star of k e to minus I k dot x, right? And if I compare this now with the Fourier transform of phi of x, which is integral dk 2 pi to the d phi of k e to plus I k x, right? So here, if I change my integration variable from k to minus k, right, then I get the same exponential here, e to minus I k x, right? But then coefficient will be phi of minus k. And therefore, it's clear that phi of minus k has to be equal to phi complex conjugate of k, right? So this follows from, again, from the reality of the field phi. So therefore, phi of minus k is actually the same as phi complex conjugate of k, right? So, you know, the field phi in real space is real, right? But it doesn't mean that this Fourier transform is real. This Fourier transform is still complex, but there is this restriction. So then this I can actually rewrite in the following way. So it's 0 of phi is equal to 1 half integral d dk phi to the d modulus of phi squared, right? Because this is phi star times phi. And then k squared plus r. Okay? And so now it's clear that that the slow modes and fast modes in this quadratic action just decouple, right? Because this I can just rewrite as 1 half integral from 0 to lambda over b d dk 2 pi to the d phi of k squared. K squared plus r plus 1 half integral from lambda over b to lambda d dk 2 pi to the d phi of k modulus squared k squared plus r. And so this is my S0 phi less. Depends only on the slow modes, and this is the S0 of phi greater, which depends only on the fast modes. Yeah?
One thing about the notation, so you're saying you're integrating between 0 and lambda.
Right.
I mean, that's just for the norm of k, right?
Yeah. Okay. That's what I said. So this notation means that the magnitude of k is restricted to be between 0 and lambda. Yeah. Okay? So, okay, so now let's look at this term. So in the contribution of phi to the fourth. So in this case, okay, so here I have S interaction of phi. This is U divided by 4 factorial integral d dx phi to the fourth of x, right? And so let me now Fourier transform that in the same way. So I'll have U divided by 4 factorial integral d dx, right? And then I separately Fourier transform every power of phi. So I get 4 integrals over a wave vector. So d dk1 2 pi to the d up to d dk4 2 pi to the d, right? So phi of k1, phi of k2, phi of k3, phi of k4, right? And then e to I, so k1 plus k2 plus k3 plus k4 dot x, right? And then here I'm going to use the continuum version of this, you know, the main identity that allows you to do the Fourier transforms, right? Which says that dx of e to I k1 plus k2 plus k3 plus k4 is equal to 2 pi to the d, and then a delta function k1 plus k2 plus k3 plus k4, okay? So, you know, if you think of this in the quantum field theory context, where, you know, this term would express interaction between particles, then, so this this delta function simply expresses the conservation of momentum of the particles in the interaction. Sorry, question?
You're missing a dot x in the exponent, in exponents.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Sorry, yeah, thank you. So this is just momentum conservation. Okay, so let me now just introduce the following notation. Let me call phi less of k. So this is going to be phi of k if k is are the slow modes. So k, the magnitude of k is between 0 and lambda over b, and then 0 for the fast modes. And then correspondingly, phi greater of k is 0 for the slow modes. And again, phi of k for the fast modes. Right, so then I can simply write my Fourier transforms in terms of phi less and phi greater without worrying about the limits of the integration, right? So then I can rewrite this Fourier transform in the following way. So this is going to be equal to okay, so let me write it here. So S interaction of phi, I can write as U divided by 4 factorial integral d d k1 to pi to the d, and all the integrals are taken in the same way from 0 to lambda, d d k4 to pi to the d, right? And then, so every one of those phi of k's, I can write as a sum of phi less of k plus phi greater of k, right? Because they never overlap, right? So I get phi less of k1 plus phi greater of k1 and so on times phi less of k4 plus phi greater of k4, and then this delta function, right? So 2 pi to the d delta of k1 plus k2 plus k3 plus k4, right? And so here you can see explicitly that they will be cross terms, right? They will be cross terms between the slow modes and the fast modes. Okay? Okay, so then let me just continue kind of formally. So now I have my partition function written as a double functional integral over the slow modes and the fast modes, e to minus the action, which depends on the slow modes and the fast modes, right? And so now imagine that I can do the integral over the fast modes. Okay, so it's actually not simple, precisely because of this fact that this interaction term couples the slow modes and the fast modes. And so we will see later how exactly we will be able to do this integral. But so for now, let's just imagine that I can formally do this integral somehow. Okay. So imagine that we integrate out, integrate over fast modes. Right? So then we get the same partition function, right? Partition function is still the same, but it's now given by integral only over the slow modes, right? With some other action, right? The action is going to change. Is going to get changed by this process of integrating out the fast modes. We will see exactly how. So let me call this new action S prime. So it's not derivative of S, it's just a different S, which is going to depend only on the slow modes now. Okay? So what is this new action? Right? So I have e to minus s prime of phi less, right? So it's going to be equal to the following. First of all, so this s of phi less and phi greater contains a zero of phi less. So it contains a contribution which does not depend on the fast modes at all. So that's obviously going to remain here, right? So I'll have e to minus s0 of phi less, right? And then I will have the following integral. Integral over the fast modes, e to minus s0 of phi greater, so the part of the quadratic part of the action which depends only on the fast modes, times e to minus s interaction, which depends on both, right? Right? Now, so, I mean, this is still exact. There is nothing, no approximations made. Let me do the following. Let me divide and multiply by the following thing. So this is e to minus s0 of phi less, right? And then I will write this part in the following way as integral d phi greater e to minus s0 of phi greater e to minus s interaction of phi less and phi greater, and then I will divide by the integral over the fast modes e to minus s0 of phi greater and multiply by the same thing times integral d phi greater e to minus s0 of phi greater. So this looks like this thing here looks like partition function for the fast modes only, right? it's a part of the partition function which corresponds to contribution of the fast modes only to the action. Right, so let me call this Z zero. So then what I have, over this. So I have E to minus S prime of phi less. So this is equal to E to minus S zero of phi less. And then 1 divided by Z zero integral D phi greater E to minus S zero of phi greater E to minus S interaction of phi less phi greater times Z zero, right? Now, so this so this part of this whole product of terms here looks like average, so statistical mechanical average of this function here, right, with respect to fast modes, right, and the statistical weight is e to minus the quadratic action of the fast modes. Okay.
Sorry, could you repeat that?
So this, those three terms, so this 1 over z times this integral, those two terms here, this looks like statistical mechanical average of this function, e to minus s interaction, with respect to the fast modes, right? And the corresponding weight is calculated with respect to the quadratic action of the fast modes, right? So I can write this whole thing just as average of E to minus S interaction phi less phi greater with respect to zero greater, meaning that I am averaging with respect to quadratic action of the fast modes. Okay.
What is the zero?
Zero just refers to as zero here, right? Okay, so then my S prime, the new action of the slow modes after I've integrated over the fast modes, then has the following form. It's S zero of phi less, right? And then minus log of average of E to minus S interaction of phi less and phi greater, average with respect to the fast modes, and then times Z zero, and then minus log of Z zero, okay? So this log of Z zero is just some constant that's unimportant, and you know, as you've are probably already used to this, you know, by this time, I'm just going to ignore this. So all I'm interested in is the you know, the dependence of this new action on the slow mode, yeah.
So it seems like what we've done here is we've said that we can think of our system as broken up into the fast mode system and then a bath of slow modes.
Well, I guess maybe the other way around, right? So it's the slow mode system, yeah, coupled to the bath of fast modes.
So when we do this average, are we making some assumption that there is not significant, that there's only a very small interaction?
No, I mean, so far I have not made any assumptions, right? So this expression here is exact, right? There are no approximations involved. Of course, to actually calculate this, we will have to, I mean, calculating this exactly is impossible because that would be, I mean, that would be equivalent to solving the problem exactly. I mean, we cannot do it. But what we will see is that this calculation becomes possible if we perturb in the deviation of the dimensionality of space from 4. Okay, so the perturbation theory that we will be doing, I mean, we always have to do some kind of perturbation theory, but so the perturbation theory here is really clever. So it's perturbation in dimensionality of space, in the deviation of dimensionality from the critical, from the upper critical dimension. So in that case, it turns out that one can actually calculate this this average here.
So we're working sort of in the grand canonical ensemble.
Well, I mean, so if you refer back to the Ising model, right? I mean, there is no, it's a canonical ensemble, I guess. There is no notion of changing the number of particles there. It's the number of spins.
If we split the modes up into.
Oh, in this sense, yeah, I guess. The number of modes is still fixed at every step.
You're considering the entire system in its entirety. Well, I mean, overall.
Except not when we take this average. Right.
It's canonical. I mean, I don't see the difference. It's canonical ensemble, right? Technically, because so the system can exchange energy with its environment, but not particles. The number of particles here is just the number of spins, number of those degrees of freedom. So they are fixed in the original microscopic Ising model. I mean, it's also fixed here, right? Because we have the upper cutoff for the modes.
I guess I was thinking that. Excitations of a mode would correspond.
In this sense, yeah. So since there is a path of the fast modes, yeah. But these notions will just never come up. For now, just think of this as kind of a formal trick. We'll talk about the physical meaning of this later, but it's not really that. It's not really, you know, slow mode interacting with the path of the fast mode. It's better to think about this in a different way. Okay? Although you're right, I mean, this is that picture is correct, but not very useful here. So basically this is what I have now, right? And the problem is to evaluate this average here. Okay. Now let me assume, and this assumption will be justified later, that this action, this new action of the slow modes, still has the same form as the original action, right? In the sense that I can still write this in the following way, as as integral dx grad phi squared plus some other coefficient r here. So the coefficient r is certainly going to change. So r prime over 2 phi squared plus u prime, so some other coefficient u, and this is going to be phi less phi less to the fourth, right? So the assumption is that this process of integrating the fast modes does not generate any new terms, okay? And the justification for this is that, in fact, it does generate new terms, but those new terms are irrelevant, okay? But it's not any, you know, it's not any different from actually, you know, in the original action, I've also just stopped the expansion of, you know, over Q and over powers of phi arbitrarily, it seems, at phi to the fourth and leading gradient term. And again, the justification for that is that all the other terms are irrelevant.
Is that independent of the dimension?
As far as this particular model is concerned, yes, it's independent of dimension. Yeah. By model, I mean this particular universality class, so Ising universality class, where you have the scalar order parameter. In principle, same things do depend on dimension, of course. Yeah. Okay, so that's what I'm going to assume. Okay, again, and justification is going to come later. So then, I can write this. In general, also, sorry, I made a slight mistake here. So let me actually write this in Fourier space. Okay, and let me maybe go to the other board. So I'll assume again that S prime of phi less has the following form. So it's going to be 1/2 integral from 0 to lambda divided by b, because it's only the slow modes now, right? dgk 2 pi to the g. Okay, so in general, the mistake I made is that, so in general, of course, that 1/2 in front of the gradient of phi squared, that's also going to change to some other number. Okay, so let me write it like this. Let me write this as, so 1/2 is going to become r0, let's say tilde. Then the So 1/2 is going to become r2 tilde, and that's multiplied by k squared, right? Then r is going to become, let me call this for now, r0 tilde, right? Sorry?
There should be a phi.
Yeah, yeah, I'll just put it after the brackets, yeah. So then I have phi of k modulus squared, right? And then I'll have plus u tilde divided by 4 factorial integral dd k1 again from lambda to, from 0 to lambda over b to pi to the d k4 to pi to the d phi of k1 so on phi of k4, and these are all phi less, of course. And then delta, so 2 pi, just let me finish writing, 2 pi to the d delta K1 plus K2 plus K3 plus K4. Yeah.
Do these tildes have anything to do with the tildes we, like, what is the relation, if any, to the tildes we had previously? Or is it just a different?
No relation. Those tildes were for dimensionless. No relation here. It's just new R's and new U's. Yeah.
So two things. The first one, those R tilde of 2 and R tilde of 0 will depend on B and lambda, right? I mean, you're
And
the other thing is that you're somehow using the assumption is that your system has some scaling variance, right? For you to somehow assume that the action has exactly the same.
No. So you know, when let's say when R zero is not zero, there is no scaling variance. I mean, the scaling variance occurs only at the exactly at the critical point.
Right.
So there is no. I mean, as you will see, what justifies this again is the fact that under repeated transformation like this, the other terms are going to become irrelevant, so they will basically decrease in magnitude, while these terms are relevant. Okay. Just be patient. You know, it's not obvious maybe immediately where this is going to, but we are not done yet, right? You will see where exactly how this works. Yeah.
I'm a little confused why that first term isn't just S0 by less again. I mean, isn't that almost the definition? So where does that
no, go? But of course, yeah. So they will be a part that's coming from S0 by less, and then there the coefficient is just 1/2. But there will be a correction in general to that coming from here.
Okay, so once you add that correction,
Yeah.
I see. So. It seems like this totally decouples the phi greater and phi less.
So that happens after I've already integrated over phi greater, right? So this is the new action that depends now only on the slow modes, right? So, you know, basically all I'm saying here is that this new action has the same form as the previous one, just with different coefficients. So 1/2 becomes R tilde 2, R becomes R0 tilde, and then U becomes U tilde. That's all I'm saying. So the general form must remain the same, but the values of the coefficients are going to change. Okay? Now, so what I want to do now is I want to bring this action of the slow modes to exactly the same form as the original one. Okay. So first of all, what I want to do, so the original action had the wave vectors defined, you know, with magnitudes from 0 to lambda. I want to redefine now my wave vectors so that they are again defined from 0 to lambda. Right, so I will redefine my wave vectors. I'll define new wave vectors. I'll call them k prime, and they will simply be equal to k times b. Right, so if magnitude of k goes from 0 to lambda over b, with this redefinition, the magnitude of k prime is again from 0 to lambda, like the original wave vectors. Right. Now, I also want to again make the coefficient of the k squared or the gradient squared term in real space. I want to make that 1/2 again. Again, just as in the original action. So to do that, I have to redefine my phi variables, right? Which I can also do. Right, because we are just calculating an integral over them, I can always redefine my integration variables. So I'll define new variables, phi prime, which are going to depend on K prime on the new wave vectors in the following way: as small z to the power minus 1 times phi less of k, and we are going to choose the value of z to be such that this coefficient is just equal to 1/2. Okay, so we'll find it explicitly just a little bit later. Okay, so this z is called wave function renormalization, and I guess that terminology presumably comes from quantum field theory again, because there are no wave functions here, right? This is all classical statistical mechanics. Okay, so let me now rewrite my action here in terms of the new wave vectors and new phis. Okay, so I have S prime of phi prime is equal to, so 1/2. Now the integral again goes from 0 to lambda, but there is a factor of b to minus d, right, coming from the measure. So I have d dk prime 2 pi to the d, and then a factor of b to minus d. Then I have r 0 tilde, so nothing happens to that. Then I have r 2 tilde, and then there is a factor of b 1 over b squared, right, coming from k squared. So b to minus 2 times k prime squared, right? Then I have a factor of z squared, and then modulus of phi prime of k prime squared, right? So this is the quadratic part. And then I have plus u tilde divided by 4 factorial. So I'll get a factor of b to minus 4d coming from the 4 integration measures. Then I'll get a factor of b to the d coming from the delta function, and because the delta function has dimensions of inverse of the argument. So b to the d it's of course, you know, this is a delta function of a vector, so I can write this as product of delta functions for each component. And so that's why it's b to the d, right? And then, so I have, again, integral from 0. And there is also the wave function renormalization, so z factor of z to the 4th. And then finally, integral from 0 to lambda, d dk1 prime 2 pi to the d, d dk4 prime 2 pi to the d, then phi prime of k1 prime, so on, phi prime of k4 prime, and the delta function of k1 prime plus k4 prime. Okay, so now, as I said, I want to choose z squared in such a way that it cancels. So z squared times b2 minus d exactly cancels that coefficient of k prime squared, right? So I want to choose now Okay, so I choose z so that z squared times b to minus d plus 2, right? So this is b to minus d plus 2 times r2 tilde, and this is equal to 1, right? So then z, the solution of this, right, is z is equal to b to d plus 2 divided by 2, right, times a times 1 divided by the square root of r2 tilde, right? And let me just write this square root of 1 over 1 over square root of r2 tilde in the following way. As so let me write this as b d plus 2 minus eta over 2, right, where basically b to minus eta is equal to r2 tilde. Okay, I'm just choosing eta in such a way that b to minus eta is equal to r2 tilde. So that's precisely this anomalous dimension critical exponent, which I've introduced before when we talked about the correlation function. Okay, so that's where it's coming from. Technically, it's from this, from the renormalization of the coefficient of the gradient term. Okay, well, we will see how that happens exactly later. Okay, so then, so after all of those transformations, right, we obtain a functional. Let me now drop all the primes and tildes. So we obtain a functional that looks exactly the same as the original one. So 1/2 grad phi squared, except with different coefficients r and u, right? And so we see exactly how those coefficients change under this transformation. Yeah.
So I'm getting a little bit lost to where we are going now, because, well, we did this first step in the renormalization group analysis, and we get exactly the same action with different coefficients.
Right.
So essentially straightening the problem to another problem that is equivalent but with different numbers.
So what
we'll
see, so what we are interested in is how the coefficients of the action change, and the reason will come in just a few seconds. Okay, so I have r prime over 2 phi squared plus u prime divided by 4 factorial phi to the fourth, right? So basically, you know, in this form, I can just represent my functional as of phi by this pair of parameters, right? R and u, right? So this transformation that we have just done, it maps my original functional into a new functional of exactly the same form, but with different coefficients, r and u, right? R prime and u prime. So what we are after, right, are the fixed points of this transformation. So imagine that now we are doing this transformation repeatedly over and over again, right? Eventually, we will come to a fixed point of this transformation, okay? So a fixed point meaning that r and u no longer change, okay? So r star and u star map back onto r star and u star, yeah.
So we make the same step with the same choice of b, right? So
yeah.
first of all, how do I know that this transformation has have a fixed point, and if the fixed point is independent of the choice of B?
How do you know that it's a transformation? So let me maybe talk about the meaning of this fixed point, and then you'll see why it must have a fixed point. As far as the independence of the choice of B, I'm choosing the B to just be very small. Slightly different from one, right? And that simply means that I'm doing infinitesimal transformations, right? That just makes it easier to calculate. That's the only point, yeah.
So two questions. One, what's the difference between R prime and R twiddle, or and U prime and U twiddle?
So how does R change, right? So the new R is this R zero tilde times B to minus D, right, times Z squared. Now, there are actually two contributions to R zero tilde. There is a contribution from the original R, right? But then there is also a contribution from this average of S interaction, right? So all of that gets folded into here. I mean, we will actually go through these transformations explicitly later, and then you will see exactly what happens to ours. Okay.
Do we care that the functional, like when we do the partition function and we have d phi,
right,
do we care that measure is going to change?
Right. So so normally we don't, right? Because that change of measure basically just multiplies the partition function by some constant, right? Which gets canceled anyway when we calculate the averages, right? Because that involves 1 over z. As I mentioned already, and in principle, you're right that one has to be careful with such things. That happens in quantum field theory, for example. There is this phenomenon known as chiral anomaly, where for fermions in the presence of some non-trivial configurations of the background electromagnetic field, you cannot simply change variables in this way. There is a non-trivial contribution coming from the Jacobian of the transformation. That has to do with quantum mechanics, basically. So such things don't arise here. Okay. So what we are looking for are fixed points of this transformation. Okay. And the reason is the following. So suppose I have my original functional S of phi, right? So that S of phi, that functional, corresponds to a particular value of the correlation length, right? So remember that the correlation length diverges at the transition, right? So a given functional corresponds to a particular temperature, so a particular distance from the transition. That gives me a particular value of the correlation length. So correlation length, again, is a function of R and U, right? So what happens to the correlation lengths after this transformation, right? What happens is that, first of all, I get a new correlation length corresponding to just a different functional S of phi with R prime and U prime. But there is also this distance rescaling transformation that we've made, right? So we multiplied all the wave vectors by b. That corresponds to dividing the distances by b, right? So therefore, the new length, correlation length, so it's not just different because it depends on different r prime and u prime. It's also different because we've explicitly divided this by b, right? We've made this rescaling transformation. So what happens now at the fixed point, right? At the fixed point, we seem to have a strange situation where, you know, so R and U don't change anymore, right? So I get psi of R prime, R star and U star going to 1 over B times the same psi. Right? So this can only be true in two situations, right? The correlation lengths can be zero, right? Then that's true. So we either have psi of R star and U star is equal to zero, and that's a one type of possible fixed point, the fixed point where the correlation length is just equal to zero. And another type is where psi is infinite, right? Then it's also true. So, or psi of R star and U star is infinite, okay? And so it's in particular, it's this type of fixed point that we are after. So this type of fixed point precisely corresponds to the critical point, okay? So at the critical point, correlation length diverges, correlation length becomes infinite, and so this type of fixed point corresponds to the critical point. Yeah.
Sorry, I think I'm a little confused. So when we did the rescaling of lambda, we effectively increased our lattice size.
Right.
So why would we not? So if we were doing everything in dimensionless numbers, we would define the correlation length in terms of number of lattice sites, right?
Right.
So wouldn't we expect that to decrease?
No. So if you increase the lattice spacing, right? It's originally the correlation length was 10 lattice spacings. Now you've doubled the lattice spacing. Now it means that the correlation length is 5.
So why do we have to set this to equal?
Well, because you know, so this. This still corresponds to the same system, right? So all I've done, so I had a partition function for my system, e to minus s of phi. All I've done is partially done this integral, right? I still have the same z, so that new functional still represents exactly the same physical system.
On the left and right, they're not measured by different lattice spacings?
Well, so let's say I'm measuring them in fixed units. I don't know, it's in centimeters.
Okay. So right? These are not number of.
Yeah.
Okay.
C's are, so I'm measuring correlation lengths in some physical units, like centimeters, right? And so since this new S of phi, it's new, but it still corresponds to the same system, then all the physical properties still have to be the same. It's just a new description for the same thing, right?
So these arrows are equality, right?
Well, yeah. Let me just try. Okay. So this type of fixed point, this corresponds to a critical point. While this type of critical point, that actually corresponds to a phase. Either one of the phases on the two sides of the critical point. This is a phase. Okay. Well, why is that? Okay, so now let's talk about the meaning of this transformation a little bit. So what I'm doing here is integrating over fast modes, right? Integrating over fast modes basically means averaging my fields phi of x, averaging the fields phi of x in real space over some distance. Right, over some distance which is of the order of lambda, of 1 over lambda. So I'm averaging phi of x over distances of order 1 over lambda, right? And then after this averaging, I'm rescaling the distances, right? So if I am, so let's say we have a critical point between a ferromagnet and a paramagnet. So the transition occurs when T is equal to TC, right? So then on either side of this critical point, the correlation length is finite, right? After this kind of averaging and rescaling, the correlation length, which is finite, is always going to go to zero, right? Because I'm just repeatedly dividing that by B, right? So any finite correlation length under this rescaling, right? If I'm measuring now the correlation length in terms of the lattice spacing, this just goes to zero, basically. Okay? And so that's the meaning of that critical point corresponding to a phase, right? However, if I'm exactly at the critical temperature, then the correlation length is infinite. Then the system is scale invariant, and you know you can change the scale all you want. The correlation length is still gonna remain infinite. Okay. Yeah.
Repeat the argument starting from the averaging part again?
So physically what this integration over the fast modes mean, right, is simply averaging, right? Averaging over some short distances, right? I am basically eliminating small variations in phi, right, which corresponds to large wave vectors, right? So I'm averaging and then rescaling all the distances by this factor b. Right? So what this means is that if I'm in either one of the phases where the correlation length is finite, right? If it's finite even if I'm very close to the critical temperature, correlation length is still finite. So if I divide it by b enough times, it's going to eventually go to zero. Right? And that's just that's what this fixed point means, right? That just corresponds to this corresponds to what happens to the phase description of phase, either you know phase on the left of the critical point or phase on the right of the critical point after this repeated renormalization group transformation. While this fixed point, right? If I'm exactly at the critical point, correlation length is infinite, so I can divide by b, you know, as many times as I want, it's still going to remain infinite. Okay, and that's the meaning of this fixed point. So basically, technically, what we will be able to do is from the behavior of R and U near this fixed point, we will be able to extract the values of the critical exponents. Okay.
One thing. When we calculated all of this, we did it outside of the critical point, uh-huh. Right? So yeah.
Well, no. I mean, all of this is valid everywhere. Yeah. Yeah.
So depending on my choice of T being TC or T different from TC, then the renormalization process will throw me to the critical point, fixed point, or the fixed
right.
Point.
Yeah. So yeah. So basically, you know, so the reason we are doing this infinitesimal transformation is that this we'll be able to from this transformation we'll be able to from the behavior of R and U's under one step of the transformation we'll be able to derive differential equations for R and U. Differential equations, you know, in how they, we describe how they behave under repeated transformation like this. And then, so the solutions of those differential equations are going to have two types of fixed points corresponding to the initial conditions, right? So we start from some R and U, and that R and U corresponds to either a phase, one of the phases, or the critical point. So if you start exactly at the critical point, under RG transformation, the solution is going to flow to that fixed point where correlation length is infinite. While if you start in either one of the phase, the solution is going to flow to those two fixed points. Okay? Yeah.
Is this the justification for why we can expect that the transformer has a fixed point?
Well, basically, yeah. Yeah. That's kind of a physical justification. Yeah. Okay? Yeah.
We still haven't given a justification for why we expect the functional form to be what it is after the integration.
Right. So that's coming later. So we actually have to see what the form of those equations is, and then we'll see why. Okay. 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 So let's continue tomorrow.